Good afternoon and welcome to House Labor and Commerce. It is 3:18 p.m. on Monday, March 26th. Members present are Representative Sullivan Leonard, Representative Stutes, Representative Knopp, Representative Birch, Representative Josephson, Vice Chair Wool, and myself, Chair Quito. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Susie Edwardson is our recording secretary this afternoon, and Cody Grusendorf is our LIO moderator. We have three items to come before us today. First hearing on Senate Bill 165, Comprehensive Health Insurance Fund. Second hearing on Senate Bill 4, Barbers, Hairdressers, Chemical Braiding. And first hearing on Senate Bill 45, Exemption of Licensing Contractors. It's also a first hearing. So with that, we will bring Senate Bill 165 before committee. Senator McKinnon, if you would like to come forward, please. Place your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with your introductory statement.
Chair Quito, members of the House Labor and Commerce Committee, I'm Senator Anna McKinnon, Chugiak, Eagle River, and Jay Bear. Thank you for hearing Senate Bill 165, an act relating to the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Fund and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, in 2015, the individual health care market in Alaska was in a precarious state. You might recall that only two insurers were currently enrolling individuals in Alaska's individual care market. Both of those insurers were experiencing significant loss. In 2016, one of two remaining insurers gave notice that they would withdraw from the Alaska individual market effective January 2017. You might also recall that the Department of Insurance was requesting a waiver and came up with a new approach, the reinsurance program, for the federal government to consider, a thought that would reinsure individuals that were high-risk recipients into a program. And we dedicated $55 million, I believe that was the number, $50 million, to a program to address those high-risk individuals and pull them out of the pool, trying to lower costs, insurance costs, for others inside of that market. Mr. Chairman, the bill before you extends the sunset date for the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Fund for 6 years, from July 30th, 2018 to June 30th, 2024. It would reroute $63 million to the general fund this year in insurance premiums that are currently being deposited in the fund, and would provide ongoing resource to Alaska of $50 million of additional revenue to be deposited in the general fund. This is the waiver that was asked for and was approved by the federal government and has been a model for consideration in other states now. I'd like to note that Premera returned $25 million as a one-time distribution back to the state of Alaska for lowering insurance premiums. The program in its entirety over the course of 5 years will bring $322 million to Alaska and help provide individual market security for those accessing insurance in our state. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any questions for the bill sponsor? Senator McKinnon, I do have one. You mentioned that $55 million will be going back into the general fund this year. Can you explain, and or maybe should we have Director Winghire explain the mechanism for that that redeposit?
Mr. Chairman, it's $63 million. The $55 million that I was referring to was done several years ago to create the reinsurance pool money to make those payments and remove that from those that were insuring individuals in our market. So we took those high-risk insurance recipients, and we paid for those people outside of the regular insurance. But I can let Lori Winghire address that further. The $63 million or $50 million annually is current insurance premiums, that a tax that is being paid right now and deposited. And so that rerouting of funds is moving that money back into the general fund where it was before we stood up this program.
Okay, thank you. Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator McKinnon, do you know approximately how many people were moved from the general pool into the high-risk pool?
Through the chair, Vice Chairman Wool, when we originally stood up the program, we were talking about 500 individuals that were driving about 95% of those high-risk costs. Ms. Winghire may be in a position to give specific numbers, but that was the original number of folks that were high risk that we were looking at insuring.
Thank you. And Ms. Winghire is not yet online, so we will bring her forward, and we've got some questions, and let her provide some testimony when she's available. We have any other questions? Seeing none, thank you, Senator. At 3:24, I will open up public testimony on Senate Bill 165, and I do not have anybody signed up on House Bill 165. I do have Michaela Fowler, if you want to come forward and be able to answer questions for the department. Thank you. Welcome to House Labor and Commerce.
Good afternoon. Michaela Fowler, Legislative Liaison for the Department of Commerce. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Fowler. Thank you. And I guess if you can talk to us a little bit about the program that we have now, and it sounded as though we've got stability moving forward with an expectation of a certain amount of revenue coming into the state annually. Could you talk about that revenue that will be coming into the state?
Absolutely. Thank you. Michaela Fowler, Department of Commerce. And when the original legislation passed, it directed premium tax dollars that had previously gone directly into the general fund to be directed into the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Fund. And that legislation had a sunset date, which is extended in this bill. So that those funds, essentially making sure that the department did not sort of relax into having this funding source, and that we would go out and we would seek alternative funding. We did so through a 1332 waiver to the federal government, and our waiver was approved, which results in this funding coming forward over the next 4 years for essentially the money that we're getting from the federal government is the amount of money the federal government views themselves as saving as a result of the reinsurance program operated on a state level. So because the federal government pays a certain portion of premiums for people on the Affordable Care Act, those premium dollars are suppressed by the reinsurance program that the legislature put into place 2 years ago. The amount that those are suppressed is being given back to the state in order to fund the program for the next 4 years.
Thank you, Ms. Fowler. And Ms. Latham, you've joined us. If you can place your name and affiliation on the record.
Good afternoon. I'm Anna Latham. I'm the Deputy Director at the Division of Insurance. And I'm happy to answer any questions. My apologies for the delay.
Okay. No. Ms. Fowler was just talking about the amount of money that we can expect to receive as a result of the 1332 waiver. Do you have anything specific you might want to add to that question?
Well, she probably covered that it was $322 million, and I'm happy to walk you through the fiscal note if you'd like.
Go ahead, yes.
Okay. So we initially submitted a zero fiscal note. The fiscal note in front of you today reflects the federal revenue that will be coming in 2019 through 2022. It's in changes in revenue. The line item is 1251 on non-UGF, and that just simply reflects federal funds through our 1332 waiver award.
Okay, thank you. Any questions on the fiscal note, Representative Birch?
I guess, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It kind of relates to insurance. I think of insurance, on an individual level, house insurance and car insurance and health insurance, but from the standpoint of dollars in, the amount of risk and exposure that there is, and then services offered. So how many beneficiaries are there in this insurance pool? What's the approximate number of people that we're talking about?
Representative Birch, through the chair, there's approximately 18,000 Alaskans in the individual market.
Okay.
And as far as the risk, I can't speak specifically to risk, but as far as funding for this program, which is the reinsurance program, the state fully funded the program in 2017. You'll probably recall there was a $55 million appropriation in special session in the summer of 2016 for the reinsurance program. And during that time, when we went before Senate Finance, I believe, they put a sunset provision on the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Fund and said, find an alternate funding source. So the Division of Insurance applied for a federal waiver. That waiver was awarded starting in 2018. It's awarded for 5 years through 2022. And because Alaska's individual market was so highly subsidized, 90% of our award is actually 90% of the reinsurance program for the 5 years of the waiver is going to be federally funded. It's about 10% state share.
Okay, and then
you have to follow up.
Yeah, follow up. So, and I remember a CHIA program, and that I think I remember that being advertised, and you know, encouraging people were being encouraged to support it or whatever. But so, is that expanded from hundreds to thousands then in the ensuing years? And I'm just wondering how. I guess I'm just trying to get my arms around the magnitude of the cost, even though it's just a 10% state component. The magnitude of the cost versus the number of people that are benefiting. Thank you.
Well, there's two things. There's the Alaska, Representative Birch through the chair, excuse me. There are two things at play. One is the Alaska Reinsurance Program. That is for individuals with high cost qualifying conditions. There's 33 qualifying conditions in regulation, mm-hmm. and that's a reinsurance program for the individual market. So what it does is when our one insurer in the individual market, Primera, cedes these qualifying conditions to the reinsurance program, then it lowers rates for everyone in the individual market. And to answer your question about growth and enrollment, it's nothing like other programs where they're growing very quickly. The individual market has been dropping in enrollment in the last year.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Bull.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Birch brought up a CHIA. So I'm assuming the CHIA isn't functioning like it used to be since the changing in health care laws and mandatory health care. And is this sort of taking the people that were in the high risk, and maybe I'm wrong about that, but is this taking people that were can you explain if a CHIA has morphed into this, or are they totally separate things?
They're two Representative Wohl, through the chair, they're two separate programs. But the old ACHIA, the high-risk federal pool, was in place before the Affordable Care Act. So it served a function that, with the Affordable Care Act, is no longer necessarily needed. So there's a very small population in that ACHIA program that's stable, that has been in that program for many years. And then the reinsurance program that was created in statute in 2016 is a separate functioning program.
Thank you. Follow up.
But it's conceivable that the few people that are remaining in a CHIA might qualify as high risk, some of the higher expensive, high risk people that we want to take out of the general pool.
Representative Wohl, through the chair, that's correct, but we haven't seen a lot of transition between those programs. Generally, pre-ACA, the individuals that were covered in the federal high-risk pool stayed in that program. They were happy to have coverage, and they've stayed consistently in that program. We haven't seen them migrate to the reinsurance program.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My other question is, so when this program was started for the 50-whatever million dollars of state money, that was done before you knew you were going to get the federal reimbursement, correct? I mean, you're going out and taking a risk, and now it's seemingly paid off.
Representative Wohl, through the chair, that is correct. We knew that we would have to find an alternate funding source, and we knew we needed to do something to stabilize the individual market. But we weren't sure exactly whether it was assessments, whether it was a waiver, what mechanism we were going to use at the time.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you for bringing the bill or bringing your presentation forward. With that, we will be setting House Senate Bill 165 aside for a future meeting and entertaining any additional public or any public testimony that might come our direction and any amendments that might come our way as well. So at this time, we will set Senate Bill 165 aside and move on to Senate Bill 45. Thank you, Senator. Senator Costello, if you wanted to come forward. And Ms. McClanahan. You can place your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with the introduction of Senate Bill 45, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Mia Costello. I represent West Anchorage in the State Senate. And before us today is Senate Bill 45. Thank you for having a hearing. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the bill provides stronger protections for buyers of homes, especially in areas where there's a lot of construction going on. It helps clarify a program we have in the books that allow for an owner-builder. So this makes it clear when owner-builders must disclose that they are building a home to sell while they are not licensed as a contractor. The intent of the legislation, as stated in the measure itself, is to continue to allow individuals to enjoy the freedom and ability to build and then sell their own homes. This bill strikes the right balance between a fairness and preserving the right for an owner to build a home. Mr. Chair, what we heard that the problem was that individuals would purchase a home and they would not be aware that it was an owner-builder home, and then when they would go to sell it, they would find that there were code issues and things that they believed existed in their home. And so it's a consumer protection bill. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to introduce Natasha McClanahan, my committee aide, to walk us through the bill if you'd like.
Okay, Ms. McClanahan, if you'll list your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with your presentation, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Natasha, for the record. I will walk through the sectional analysis of Senate Bill 45. Section 1 adds legislative intent language to uncodified law to help assure that changes made by the bill are construed broadly to allow individuals the freedom and ability to construct and sell their homes based on their own discretion, which is page 1, lines 3 through 7. Section 2 requires the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, or the Department of Labor and Workforce Development to investigate and take appropriate action if an owner-builder tries to sell a structure while not licensed as a contractor during the time of constructing the building or 2 years after construction, which is page 1, lines 8 through 14. Section 3 amends AS08-18-161 to exempt from construction contractor requirements those who work on an existing structure on their own property or their own existing residence. It also would require an owner-builder to notify the Alaska Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development on a form provided by the agency when advertising or selling a home built if an owner-builder tries to sell while not licensed as a contractor during the time of construction or 2 years after construction begins. And then Section 4 adds applicability language to the uncodified law that would provide clarity on when construction begins under Section 3, either when the actual construction starts or when an owner enters into an agreement with someone to provide labor, act as a subcontractor, or provide materials for the construction.
Thank you. Any questions for the bill sponsor, Representative Josephson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For either Ms. McClanahan, did I have that right?
Yes.
Or the sponsor. Can you compare this bill to Representative Tilton's bill from a couple of years ago? Which was designed to do something similar, although it may have been perhaps more ambitious. It was designed to stop someone from acting like a general contractor and then quickly turning around and selling properties one after the other. That's my memory.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, the bill that your colleague had introduced is addressing the same issue, and I'm not sure if the resolution of it is the same. I believe this version is simply where the builder, once they decide to sell a home, lets the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development know that, and it still retains the owner-builder statute, which allows for somebody to build their own home, live in it, and then sell it after 2 years. So this would just simply say that the person, once they decide to sell the home, they let the department know to avoid abuses that are actually occurring now where people are actually trying to sell the home prior to the two-year time period. So it's a disclosure.
Follow up?
Follow up.
What is the remedy for abuse? Does this bill speak to that? Or is it mostly a notice issue, which is a remedy of sorts?
Yeah. Through the chair. It's a notice issue, so the Department of Commerce may be able to speak to it better about what ramifications may be if they're not providing the notification. Mm-hmm. But it will provide the department with some way of knowing and better tracking when this is happening.
Thank you, Ms. McKenahan. Question from Representative Knopp.
Mr. Chairman, I just have a comment, not a question. But first, I'm going to start by thanking the Senator Costello for introducing it. I thought I read it pretty thoroughly as a contractor. I get really personal on bills affect contractors and homeowners. And just as you mentioned, Mr. Chairman, it really is a consumer protection bill. I read it probably half a dozen times or more, and a reporter called me about it. And in my mind, it simply was a consumer protection bill, and without restricting any rights or freedoms of homeowners to do so. Yeah, but I just want to mention that one of the things that spurred a lot of this type of growth is that a few years ago, many of you remember, the IRS allowed you to sell your personal residence as long as it was a primary residence within 2 out of the last 5 years. You can sell it up to $500,000 tax-free. And when they did that, it spurred a lot of growth in this homeowner. So you could build it. Theoretically, you could sell two homes in a five-year period that you built yourself without any disclosure. So I just think it was a good all-around bill that just made that notice available and takes care of some of them issues. As you know, builders have them issues all the time about things being built substandard, not the code, as homeowners aren't professional builders doing it every day. I appreciate the bill and appreciate the fact that it didn't limit anybody's ability to do what they like to do, but it gives the consumer a little bit of protection and disclosure end of things. So thank you.
Thank you. And I do have a question, and I think for either you or for somebody else, maybe the department, I guess it's my understanding that this legislation does not preclude the ability of a city to regulate code enforcement within their jurisdiction if they so choose. And so I think we have either 6 or 9 communities in Alaska that are communities that have a designated jurisdiction for building codes, and those building codes would apply to these projects as well as other projects, but this provision is really to try and put some protections in place for those people that don't have a municipal building code authority in their communities. Is that?
Mr. Chair, that's my understanding, and I would feel also comfortable if somebody online could reply to that also.
Okay, and we do have Ms. McCullough online, I believe. Janie, are you there?
Hi, good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This is Janie McCullough. I'm the Division Director of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing.
Thank you, Ms. McCullough. And do you have any thoughts on what I know this is something that you would be starting to do that you might not be doing now, so we might be outside of your area of expertise, but do you have any thoughts on what's been discussed so far?
This does not have any effect on local municipality's ability to continue to enforce building codes.
Yep.
That's an answer to that question. It is a consumer protection bill. It would simply be a requirement to disclose on a form to our department. That would be just another tool in the toolbox for buyers.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. McCullough. And we have a question from Representative Birch for either the sponsor or Ms. McCullough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had just trying to understand, is it 2 years after construction begins, or is it 2 years after construction is completed? And that's because I mean, I know some places might take 6 months or a year or even longer to get something built. I seem to remember houses in Fairbanks that they'd get the basement done, and then that was kind of where they stopped, and it would be there for 20 years. You know, so construction can be kind of defined in a range. But is it 2 years from the beginning of construction or 2 years after the end of construction, and how do you define the end? Yeah, through the chair.
Through the chair, Representative Birch, it's my understanding that the starting point for construction, for the timing of it, is when you break ground and you begin the building. Okay. If the home is then completed after 2 years' time and the owner would like to sell it, they then have to notify the department.
Okay.
Via form.
Follow-up?
Follow-up.
And if I remember, there's some sort of a federal tax deal on if a builder owner can live in it for a certain prescribed amount of time, and then I can't remember what it is, but I think you do have to live in it for a period of time, and then you can sell it, and then you know go out and build. I mean, a bona fide building contractor can go out and build another home, and then and roll that forward. Is that? I'm not familiar with those time frames. Through the chair.
Mr. Chair, I'm not an expert on tax law. Mm-hmm. Perhaps somebody else can reply to that question.
Thank you, and I'm not sure we've got anybody.
Yeah, and I don't
answer
know
the particular tax questions,
but I just was curious about the start time. Great, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, and I think we'll get on to invited testimony. Thank you, Ms. McClanahan, Senator Costello.
Thank you.
First up, let's go ahead and bring Alan Wilson up. Mr. Wilson, if you can come forward, place your name and affiliation on the record, and provide us with your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Alan Wilson. I am the owner of Alaska Renovators, located here in Juneau, Alaska, 7290 Glacier Highway. I will keep my comments short, since I know you have a lot to do today. I'm basically, obviously, in support of the bill. As a member of the Alaska State Home Builders Association, I've worked on this issue for multiple sessions now. Oftentimes, when you're painted with a black brush, paintbrush, you want to find a solution to not be painted with that brush, and this was one avenue that we came up with as an association to help consumers and buyers of homes throughout the state have some awareness as to who built their homes, and that's where we're at today. I'm more than willing to answer any questions. I will comment on one of the questions that came up earlier about there not being any penalties in the bill. That was never our intent to penalize anybody. It was more to just put consumers on notice. And with that, that's all I have, unless you have questions.
Thank you. Do you have any questions for Mr. Wilson? Seeing none, thank you for coming forward. We also have Jim Dunlap with the Alaska State Home Builders Association. And Mr. Dunlap, if you could place your name and affiliation on the record, provide us with your statement, please.
Chairman Keto, Representative, my name is Jim Dunlap. I serve as the president of Alaska State Home Building Association, and I did come today to speak on Senate Bill, 45. And I'd like to thank you for considering the bill in the midst of everything that you have on your plate right now. Chairman Keto, before I do speak about Senate Bill 45, I'd like to take a moment to talk about this bill dovetailing into our priorities and goals of our organization. Last time I spoke with you, I was in the hot seat in Juneau in early February, and I asked you to consider a bill to establish a statewide residential building code. Your committee honored that request, and the bill was introduced. I want to say thank you for working with our organization on our efforts to promote a better building practice and protecting the interests of homebuyers and consumers. We're going to continue working on the residential building code in an open way. But our number one priority this session is to see Senate Bill 45 pass. It's a bill that's been vetted for a number of years. The committee process and public input has made it a better bill. Senate Bill 45 attempts to protect the consumer in those instances where the unlicensed builders use the exemption to build and sell homes. We're not here to prohibit or punish anybody. But too often we've seen the case where the homes are being built and sold under the guise of a licensed contractor. But that's not the case. This bill simply asking someone to build and sell a home without a license to disclose if they try to sell the home within 2 years after construction. And that's what we're up to. Our projects right now are consumer protection. None of them involve penalties. And if there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Dunlap. Do we have any questions? Not seeing any. Thank you for your testimony. We will, at 3:48 p.m., open up public testimony. We do have people signed up for public testimony. I'll take public testimony in the order in which people have signed up or called in. First up, I have Richard Carr. Mr. Carr, if you can place your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with your testimony, please. Mr. Carr, if you are muted, perhaps unmute your phone.
Can you hear me now?
There we go. Yep, we've got you now.
Okay, I apologize for that. Yeah, my name is Richard Carr. I am from Wasilla, Alaska. And I want to thank you for hearing me out today. And I would like to let you know that I am in favor of Senate Bill 45. I have been a contractor in Alaska for 44 years, and I've seen a lot in those years, and this has recently has disturbed me quite a bit to see some of the products that are coming out of the owner-builder problem. Being a remodeler, among other things, I have been asked to come in and inspect and give advice on customers who have called me and who are greatly distraught, and they've wound up finding a good deal on a home and purchased it, and to their dismay, it was in pretty bad shape. And I'll give you one example, and then I'll try to be quick. Last fall, I was called in, and the builder had used the wrong material for girders in the crawl space, and the floor joists were failing, and sheetrock was cracking, and this pretty large, beautiful home was in need of a lot of repair. And the owners asked me what could be done, and I told them I would give them a price, but it would be pretty expensive to do the repairs. And my point is that if this couple would have had an idea that who had built their home, they told me that they could have addressed the issue with the home seller and got a little relief for the repairs. And that's one thing. And it's just a big consumer issue. And I believe this Senate Bill 45 will give just critical information to customers when they're out looking to purchase a home.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Carr. Do we have any questions for Mr. Carr? Representative Sullivan Leonard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hi, Mr. Carr. Thanks so much for giving testimony today. Would you also give testimony with regard to Matsu Home Builder's position on this?
Matsu Home Builders are 100% in favor of this Senate Bill 45. They feel like it will improve the valley to a great deal.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
And how many home builders are in the Matsu Home Builders Association?
Builders and associates, we have about 145.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Carr.
Okay. Question from Representative Josephson.
Yes, through the chair. Mr. Carr, when you sell or when you construct a home for sale, are you required to file any paperwork with the department of the fact that you're constructing a property for sale, I guess? Are you required to do that now?
Not in the Matsu Borough.
Follow up.
So who in government, either borough or state government, knows, for example, if you're building a subdivision, you're building three or four homes, who's aware of that fact? In government?
in government.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody that I know of, Alaska Housing Finance or the VA loan people, those are the finance people would know it. That would be, they have to be part of that.
Thank you. Follow up?
No, thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Carr. Next up for public testimony, we have Patrick Dalton. Mr. Dalton, can you please place your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with your testimony, please?
Yes, thank you for taking my testimony. Patrick Dalton from Delta Junction. A few years ago, there was a similar bill, as you know, that went through the legislature, and I think it was wisely, in that bill, they wisely exempted the rural unorganized areas. In my letter, which accompanied the documents last year on Senate Bill 45, my objections, you'll find that I've made a case for why this is unfair leveraging upon the rural areas of Alaska, this Senate Bill 45. However, today, in my brief time that I have, I would like to point you to an article which I submitted to you a few days ago, and it's called Zoning Regulations from the Cato Institute. The author is Brown and Vanessa Brown Calder, and it was just done in October 17th. And I'm going to read you some quotes out of this study, which pretty much seals the case for building regulations, including building codes, and how they increase home prices in an area. I will quote you the following. It wasn't always true that zoning had such broad jurisdiction. Comprehensive zoning and land use planning were mostly unknown in America prior to the 20th century. Property rights remained intact and the courts adjudicated disputes between landowners. Another quote. Zoning and land use regulations have a deleterious effect upon housing and affordability. Reforming zoning, local zoning, and land use regulations. Reforms such as streamlining the approval process and making development by right. This is what they recommend. Some more quotes. In general, the states that have increased the amount of rules and restrictions on land use the most have the highest housing prices. Another quote. Now, I have very little time, so I'm trying to read through this article. Land use rules had the effect of reducing U.S. economic output by 8.9%. So you see, what we have here is there should be a fiscal note to the consumer because the home prices in the areas that are not under building and zoning right now are going to see prices skyrocket on the houses. Some more quotes. Home prices are lower in the states with fewer zoning regulations. And by the way, they define zoning regulations to include building regulations. Another quote, the trouble with rising regulation is that it creates barriers to new housing supply, and this often raises housing prices. As I continue to quote my little time left here, Cato Institute study that I submitted to your department, to the Labor and Commerce, House Labor and Commerce Committee just a few days ago. I hope you received it. The article is called Zoning and Land Use, Vanessa Brown Calder, and I know I'm running out of time here. I'm trying to read quickly. I'm hoping you'll direct your attention to this because, see, there is. I really believe that there's an overlooked fact of life here. We're in an era when people are becoming aware that regulations hinder our economy and in a large scale but also in a small scale. And any building regulations such as the one that is proposed here are going to adversely affect the state, you know, statewide. But I'd like you also to remember that, well, I'm out of time. I'm sorry. Thank you for taking my testimony.
Mr. Dalton, we do have a question for you, so hang on the line
sure.
for a minute. Representative Josephson, go ahead.
Yes, through the chair, Mr. Dalton, you said that this bill, or at least regulation, will cause prices to skyrocket. This bill asks that an owner-builder complete a form. I bet it can be done digitally. Why is this such a burden on the owner-builder, in your view? It's a form, is it not?
Yes, you're right, sir. Thank you for asking me that particularly important question, because in this very article by the Cato Institute that I referred you to, it addresses the fact that the regulations the requirements of the regulations in any form create paperwork, which makes an uncertainty in the building market because plans have to be made. Anybody that's in business, I'm in business. We got two businesses. Businesses always, and this is common sense, always pass the cost onto the consumer. Costs can be tangible things, but they can also be more intangible, like uncertainty about whether the application is going to be accepted or rejected or whatever. So you see, the same thing happens in the private sector, the home builders that are not necessarily businesses. If there's an uncertainty anywhere, it's going to create a ripple effect in the market. This is what we would call, Austrian economics. It's the economic theory that the less control there is, the better it is. We need fewer regulations. Fewer regulations cause us less, and they cost you less in the government. And so if it's not broke, don't fix it. But out here in the unorganized boroughs, see, we have another issue where it's totally different out here. And I hope you read my letter. It's Dalton. It's under documents. It accompanied Senate Bill 45 last year when it was in the House Labor and Commerce, or the Senate Labor and Commerce, I'm sorry, committee.
Thank you, Philip.
Yeah. Mr. Dalton, why, since we're the assembly for the unorganized borough, why shouldn't we exercise precaution on behalf of residents of unorganized boroughs, since they don't have local governments to protect them? Why shouldn't we be vigilant and care about purchasers of homes in the unorganized boroughs?
Well, sir, there's two things to consider here from my point of view. One is, yes, you are to represent us, I agree. But the other thing is, you're to represent everyone, including the consumer. And I just made a case for you in this study here, quoted, that you're going to increase prices on the home buyer. This is being sold to us as a protection for the consumer, but really it's going to increase prices of homes for a consumer. Like, for instance, I live in Delta. Houses here are cheaper than Fairbanks because Fairbanks is in a borough, and they have regulations. And there was a well-spoken gentleman last year in the Senate Labor and Commerce that gave a testimony for the Alaska Home Builders Association and also the Anchorage Home Builders Association, and he did a wonderful job. He's on a different side than I am, but he made the case for me that this bill is really primarily concerned with us in the rural areas because the organized areas already have building and zoning. They can implement them. They can enforce their codes. So really, the only base this is covering, this bill, is us out in the unorganized borough. And I would like to ask you on the committee, how many of you are from from the rural areas or the unorganized areas?
Well, I think we've got people from a variety of areas, so I don't know that we'd be able to effectively answer that question, but we do accept your comment. We have a question from Representative Birch as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your testimony this afternoon. One of the issues that came up earlier this year, actually, related to basically code issues as it relates to home construction in rural areas, and it largely is an outgrowth of how and where and when people are interested in financing their home or their property. And I guess my question would be through the chair would be, are you aware of any in Delta, or is there any outside financing on? I assume there is, but I mean, what's the impact of that? And usually a lending institution is pretty fussy about making sure, a property that they're lending money on for 20 or 30 years or whatever, that's properly built. And what has been your experience in that arena, sir?
Mr. Dalton.
Yes, sir. I am a specialty contractor. I don't deal with financing, and I'm sorry I can't answer that. My primary position here is I am fighting, my case is fighting for the consumer in the market out here, not a privileged contractor, just the owner, home builder, Freedom in Alaska. Many of us moved up here in order to be, out in this area at least, in many of these rural areas, in order to be a little bit free from the zoning and regulation that you guys have in your boroughs. But what I see is I see many people from your areas, legislators that are in organized boroughs, trying to impose a set of regulations upon us. And I'm contend with you, if you read my letter, that we don't want this kind of government out here. We want fewer controls, fewer regulations, more freedom on our property, the way America used to be before the 20th century regulations. And we're not lawless out here. It's just that many people here have started out, come here, built their own houses, and we don't think that we really want, to ask permission to do that, many of us. And if you take this away from all this vast area of vast wild out here, all the way to the Canadian border and all the way out to Nome and all the way up to the North Starborough, you're covering such a huge area of people that have come here to be free and free of regulations and asking permission and to impose paperwork upon us. You're imposing a lot more than you realize upon us. And I think it's kind of hypocritical in a way, because many of you that have this position are in a borough already where you have all the regulations that you should be able to have if you want.
Thank you. Follow up? Go ahead.
Sir, do you have a business license?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, to the extent that you've subordinated yourself in your business to the state from the aspect of having a business license, I don't see this as a whole lot more complicated than that. All it's saying is, if you're a builder, if you build something on your own and you build it as a house, if you turn around and sell it within 2 years, then the state's going to be looking at you as like, hey, maybe I ought to have a business license. I mean, as I read this, and it's really the unsuspecting home buyer that buys something. And typically, or I suspect that there's a lot of financing going on out there that you might not be aware of, but a lot of that the financing aspects are really a protection, and they're looking to have those kind of be backstopped and understand how the construction works. So I don't see it as a whole lot more complicated than the business license that you have, being this would basically have that expectation of somebody that's basically in the business of building houses, if they're turning them over every 2 years or so.
Could I ask you a question in regard to that? What are you doing to protect the person that is not a contractor or a business, who is a homeowner, a young kid that's building their first house on their property? They build it, they decide to sell it. What do you have? How are you protecting their constitutional right, their private property, and their ability to turn around and sell if they happen to within 2 years?
Through the chair. I don't think there's any prohibition on somebody building and selling. I think the expectation is, if you're in the business of building and selling, that you have a license. Thank you.
As I understood it, the person is supposed to file paperwork notifying the state that they have not, that they are not a contractor if they are selling within 2 years. And I see that as an encumbrance upon a private citizen that is not a builder, not a contractor, just a home builder, homeowner builder, a young couple, a young kid that built a house and is living the Alaskan dream. And then he has to go and get permission, basically, from the state before he can do anything with his property. Okay. So, therefore, it is an infringement upon private property, not for the contractor. You can regulate contractors all you want, as far as I am concerned, but I am looking to the private property issue. As this article I quoted you said, prior to the 20th century, property rights were remained intact. And see, we're over-regulating the society we live in, and there's a lot of us that believe this, and many of us are out here in these rural areas, and we want deregulation. And that's what they did in the Reagan era, and it saw the biggest boom, economic expansion in the history of the United States, because Reagan did two things. He deregulated the economy, of course, on the macro scale, and he also cut taxes. And that's what our state government should be doing. It should be in the business of cutting taxes and deregulating, even on the small scale, to the local kid growing up building his house. He should be deregulated also. He should be free. And that will provide an economic a freedom that will inspire people. And then we'll see a market rebound, and we'll see people that are enthused about building in Alaska and creating businesses.
Thank you, Mr. Dalton. Do we have any other questions for Mr. Dalton? We do have a question or a comment from Representative Knopp. Go ahead.
So, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's not a question, but I do want to make a comment, and I want to make it very clear, and also make it very clear when I get done talking. I'm pretty sure you're not going to be any more comfortable about this legislation than you are right now. But first thing, this has nothing to do with planning or zoning. That's adopted through local municipalities under Title 29. Gives the local municipalities, boroughs, cities, whatever it may be, that power. This statute, SB 45, has nothing to do with planning and zoning powers. I want to say that. The other thing you mentioned is you're asking permission. This in no way, shape, or form indicates anybody seeking permission. It simply says the homeowner must notify a potential buyer that it was not built by a licensed contractor. And it's interesting, you as a specialty contractor who does this type of work, you're probably intimately familiar with the regulations associated with building codes, and you probably comply with them because you do it every day. But a homeowner, a young guy just starting out, may not know them same building techniques, practices, best practices. And so so as we mentioned, it's the Consumer Protection Bill, and that's for the exact same reason you just mentioned. For a new guy starting out who doesn't have that experience, it's letting a potential buyer know wasn't built by a licensed professional contractor who does it every day. And it's interesting that you somewhat argue against this when the Home Builders Association statewide, which is an organization of statewide builders, licensed contractors, advocate for that, just for that protection to distinguish between the contractor who does this all the time and those who do not. And so I just wanted to get that on the record. It limits nobody's rights in any way, shape, or form. It has nothing to do with zoning or code regulations. And the last thing I want to mention is that you talked about unorganized boroughs. So I live in the Kenai Peninsula borough, where we have not adopted zoning powers, and we have not adopted codes for regulating building codes. We have not, but our cities inside the borough have. So all of our cities have adopted the building code, which, you know, they have the building inspectors. So it doesn't have to be an unincorporated area of the borough. A lot of boroughs have decided not to adopt building code, so I just hope that clears it up a little bit. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Knopp. And I did not see any other questions, so thank you for your participation and your testimony, Mr. Dalton. And we do have the information that you had emailed. It has been passed out to committee members. We will be holding this bill over, and we will be bringing it up hopefully again soon. We will let everybody know. It will be put out on basis when we have it scheduled for the next meeting. With that, we will set Senate Bill 45 aside and bring up our last item of business, Senate Bill 4, which is our second hearing on Senate Bill 4. We can have Senator Machicki and Ms. Henke come forward and reintroduce the bill for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of House Labor and Commerce. I'm appreciate you having us back here again today. I'm not sure. Do you just a quick summary of?
I think just a reminder of what the bill is going to do for us. Basically, what we're doing, providing the separate licensing categories.
Okay. So again, the bill does four things. And, well, there's a fifth now. I'll let Ms. Henke touch on that since the bill's been changed a bit here. It clarifies that owners must conspicuously display their shop license so that practitioners in their shops are not cited for a license that has lapsed. It allows shops to self-certify with a program from the Department of Environmental Conservation since they are no longer, the department is no longer providing certifications due to budget reductions. It creates two new license types. First is the non-chemical barbers. Remember, these are the guys that use scissors and clippers to cut your hair. They don't color, they don't curl, they don't do some of those other things that my wife spends so much on. And it also has the traditional barber's license, higher level license remaining. And finally, it has a specific license for braiding and takes it down from 1,650 hours of training to 35 hours of training, which teaches them the things they need to know, and that is about cleanliness and health and safety issues, as well as probably some customer relations stuff. So we feel that it opens the door for more Alaskans to be joining the workplace or remaining in the workplace at a lower cost, and we feel that it matches the training requirements to what people actually will be doing for a living.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Machicki. Ms. Hanke?
For the record, Rachel Hanke, staff of Senator Machicki. The fifth thing that this bill does, which this committee adopted, will separate tattooing and cosmetic coloring into two separate licenses, but also expands the definition of tattooing to also include microblading and microneedling.
Thank you. Any questions for the bill sponsor or staff? Representative Wool.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have one question, and I asked it last time, so the answer is the same, but I guess I just want you to know I'm curious, and that's the hours for the non-chemical barber, because before you said the one ran from 1650 to 35, which I'm totally in favor of, and the non-chemical barber goes from 1650 to X, and we don't know. And is that just a board decision at this point?
That is a board decision. We feel the board does a very good job generally on defining hours. I think we're making a fairly clear message with this bill that we expect the hour requirements to match the requirements of the job. So I have faith that they will come in with a reasonable amount of training required for non-chemical barbering.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? We also have Sarah Chambers with the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development available online, and Kevin McKinley available, chair of the Board of Barbers and Hairdressers, available for questioning. Do we have any questions for those individuals? Seeing none, we do still have public testimony open. I do not have anybody signed up for public testimony, so I'll close public testimony at 4:15 p.m. And that brings the bill back before us, and I think I would like to just make a comment. I think we're seeing some of this where there are things that are changing in the industry, and we are adapting to that. Sometimes it feels like is it necessary for us to continue to work on some of these areas, or is it necessary for us to continue to make these changes? I do think we are a dynamic body, the Senate and the House, and I do think that it makes sense for us to be looking at our statutes, and when they don't accommodate the work that's taking place out there, it makes a lot of sense for us to go in and try and fix that, and this is one of those that seems to be a relatively easy fix that we can allow people to continue to work and continue to work without excessive amounts of training in an area that is we've basically decreased that entry hurdle for some people to get into. And so I do think it seems like a good idea. And then honoring in the process the request of the tattooists to be separated out as a separate license is an indication of the process really working as the bill is working through the system. We've made some changes that actually provide us with a better board of barbers and hairdressers, and from my perspective, a better opportunity for people to get the services that they want to receive. Any other comments on Senate Bill 4? No other comments. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move SB 4 version 30-LS0078/N be passed from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Okay. Any objections to the motion as stated? Seeing none, Senate Bill 4 moves from Labor and Commerce Committee. At this time, I will just make an announcement for our Wednesday meeting. We are going to be trying to bring in several bills, House Bill 401, second hearing on insurance and reinsurance, Senate Bill 15, e-cigs, tobacco, nicotine, minors, and sales will be a first hearing on that bill, House Bill 379, commercial Fisherman's Fund Vessel Owners Claims, second hearing on that bill. House Bill 353, Marital and Family Therapy Licensing Services, second hearing on that bill. And if we can get all committee members to stick around as we sign the paperwork for Senate Bill 4, I will call House Labor and Commerce adjourned at 4:18 p.m. Thank you.